Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and its underwriters. And now, today's program. My guest today is corporate attorney Benji Taylor Jones. She recently joined the Raleigh office of Ward & Smith, and she is a trusted counselor to numerous private and public companies in a variety of corporate and securities law matters. For nearly two decades, Benji has been advising her clients on how to raise funds. Her practice primarily focuses now on crowdfunding and fintech financing. Benji played a critical role in the passage of North Carolina's Intrastate Crowdfunding Exemption, the North Carolina PACES Act. She represented the only platform offering peer-to-peer real estate loans under Regulation A and the first North Carolina company to conduct a regulation crowdfunding campaign under the Title III of the Jobs Act. Benji is on the forefront of crowdfunding offerings in North Carolina. She advises public and private companies on a broad spectrum of legal issues affecting their businesses. She regularly represents clients in public equity and debt offerings, traditional private placements and repurchase programs, public company securities, compliance, corporate formation and governance, early stage financing for startups and growth companies, mergers and acquisitions, and strategic contracting. She is an adjunct professor and a guest lecturer at local area universities and law schools. She regularly speaks and writes on crowdfunding, the Jobs Act, and regular and related matters. She has her JD degree from Columbia University Harlan Fiske Stone Scholar in 1998. New York University MA in 1996, and Southern Methodist University, where she received a BFA in 1991. Her handle on Twitter is Benji BTJ. And thanks for being on the show, Benji. I cut your bio a little short. I left out some of the
really
impressive things.
Long bio.
A really impressive bio, and I'm so glad you could come in and talk about the practical matters of the NC PACES Act.
Thank you so much for having me, Lee. Before I get started, I need to do a little disclaimer.
Okay,
just like
yes,
you did.
I know.
So
I knew that was coming.
I'm a lawyer, I only play one on radio. And so folks shouldn't take what I'm saying here as legal advice. I'm more kind of giving a general overview.
It's purely educational.
It's purely educational. But if they would like some more information, I encourage them to reach out to a practicing securities lawyer like we have at Ward & Smith, like me, but it doesn't have to be me. But so if they're interested more, they really should get educated.
Well, and it's something that's, when we were talking before we went on the air, I've been in a few venues and I've heard things from clients where they've been told or heard, oh, don't worry about the securities laws, no one does. And I'm like, no, don't,
please,
you have to understand these because it's the make or break of your business.
It's very important, and to do it right is much easier than to try to fix it when you do it wrong. And it just takes finding the right counselor to walk you through the steps you need to step through to get to the right end.
Well, and today we're going to focus on this new NC PACES Act, the Intrastate Crowdfunding. And in reality, it's an exemption for us to do crowdfunding, correct?
Yes. Technically, it's an intrastate securities offering exemption. So a little bit of Securities 101. Under the securities law, the default rule, both in federal and state regulation, is that you need to register the offering of the securities or find an exemption from those registration requirements. So registration is expensive, it's time-consuming, it's invasive, and most companies operating in this state don't want to do it. The Fortune 500s, they're doing it, and that's what is expected. So companies, private companies, typically try to find an exemption to raise their capital. And historically, most registration exemptions have prohibited advertising, so you couldn't go out and publicly announce to the world that you were raising capital. And they also have limited the types of investors who can participate in those offerings to the very wealthy, what is known as an accredited investor. So big companies and individuals with a high net worth or high income. But now, with intrastate crowdfunding, we operate differently. It's a brand new path. It presents this option for raising capital from any resident within the same state where the company operates. So thus, you know, we're staying within a single state, thus the intrastate concept.
Meaning intra, meaning within the borders of that state.
Exactly.
So for North Carolina company, within the borders of North Carolina.
Which means you're a company that's located here in North Carolina, doing business here in North Carolina, and you've got to satisfy some tests to achieve that. And your investors have to be North Carolina residents.
And there's about 35 states now that have intrastate, and each one has a little bit difference. But if you're in a state like Indiana and they have it, you follow their rules. But to stay intrastate, it's the businesses in Indiana, the investors are in Indiana.
That's exactly right. And it is, depending on when I look at the list, it's anywhere from 33 to 37, depending on whether people have passed their statutes or actually enacted rules to implement them. But yes, every state is a little bit different, and we think here in North Carolina, we've done it differently and better than anybody else because we're the Old North State. We
right.
do everything better.
Well, and let's talk about some of those differences because we've talked on previous shows that there is an NCPO and then there's an LPO. And so let's start with the NCPO, walk through that, what that one is, and then just kind of let everyone know educationally, this is not legal advice, what they mean and what's the impact for them when they're considering this, and is this for them?
Okay, I'd be happy to. So the NCPO, the North Carolina PACES offering, is very similar to Kickstarter and Indiegogo, but it's kind of Kickstarter and Indiegogo on steroids.
Okay.
So instead of just asking for a donation or pre-selling a product or a service, you are offering people the chance for a return on their investment. So you give me a dollar,
right?
And in a year, I'll give you $1.10. And that's a return. And in all of the senses, whether we're talking about the NCPO or the other way we're going to talk about, which is the LPO, this is a security. If you are asking somebody to give you money,
right,
with the promise of a return on that investment, that is a security, no matter what name we call it. That's what it is. And that's why it's regulated. So the North Carolina PACES offering, the NCPO, operates very similar to the way you would operate a Kickstarter and Indiegogo campaign or even a Title III regulation crowdfunding campaign under the Jobs Act. Basically, you put up a website, what's called a platform, where people can go to learn about the company, learn about the offering, talk about the offering, where the crowd gets to give
right.
their input, and that's where you process your investments.
Then when we're talking about that platform, that's an approved, regulated platform in and itself that is following the rules to be that.
Yes, there's several ways you can create a platform. The two kind of outside of your own company ways are to hire outside intermediaries. And there's two types of outside intermediaries you can use for this platform. And that is a North Carolina funding portal
okay.
or a registered broker dealer. But what also makes North Carolina different is companies can actually create their own portals on their own website. So you don't have to hire that third party
right.
to do it for you. Now, to make it all work in the background, you're going to need some people to help you mechanically make all that magic where
and
we
mechanically
click the button
comply.
And mechanically right. comply. So irrespective of whether or not you've engaged a third party to put your platform up or you're creating your own platform, there's still rules you have to follow when you do that. But I want to get back to first
right.
also kind of the limits of the NCPO.
Okay.
So in the NCPO, you can raise up to $1 million in 12 months, $2 million if you have a 12-month period of audited or reviewed financials. You can go up to that amount. Most companies in North Carolina who are good fits for PACES, I think, don't even need $1 million. So you need to have some operating history to go beyond $1 million. But that's your cap. Also recognize that in all of these PACES offerings, there is a cap on the amount the company can raise. So under the NCPO, it's $1 million or $2 million if you have those audited or reviewed financials that you need.
Right.
And there's going to be a cap on the amount of money you can take from any investor who's a North Carolina resident if they are not an accredited investor.
Meaning if they're just, if it's the average guy walking down
ordinary
the street.
Ordinary man, the everyman right. investor in North Carolina under the PACES Act can't invest more than $5,000 in any given offering under PACES in any 12-month period.
And it's not just a single, it's not $5,000 per crowdfunding opportunity, it's just a flat $5,000 for that year?
No, okay. It's actually per company.
Okay.
Per year.
Right.
So let's say there's three companies that are conducting PACES offerings in a 12-month period, and I'm wanting to invest.
Right.
I could put $5,000 in each of those offerings, but I couldn't put more than $5,000 in any of them. But it's not a wallet that runs out of money after I spend it all for the year. For right. all everything under PACES, it's I have a budget for each offering every 12 months.
Great.
But that's a $5,000 cap. So that takes some planning as well. So that NCPO, the North Carolina PACES offering, has to be put up on the internet. It must be conducted through a portal that's either established by the company, established by a North Carolina funding portal, or a broker-dealer,
okay.
a registered broker-dealer. You have to follow those caps. The also important thing, which is also true across the board with PACES, is you have to have an escrow. So you have to have a bank or a depository system or another approved entity to hold the investor's funds until you reach your minimum target
right.
before you can close. So this is one of the systems of checks and balances that we have established to protect the investors so that they don't
right.
have their money taken before the deal can close
so
officially.
So average Joe and average Jane that wants to put that $5,000 in knows that the company will not have access to that $5,000 until they've reached the minimum percentage that's been established in the offering, and it is 20%?
It depends. Under North Carolina PACES offering, it is 20% of your target. So if you're raising $1 million, you couldn't close on your offering, here's my math, until you raise $200,000, right?
Right.
So it's 20% under the North Carolina PACES.
So if it's 2 million, it's 400,000. It's we've talked about this before on the show. The minimum can be more than that 20%.
That's exactly right.
Because you have to net an amount. There's a minimum functional practicality in your business that if I don't raise, okay, I only have to raise 20%, but really I need 50% to be able to execute what I'm promising for this offering. And therefore, I'm more likely to set my minimum at that 50%, and that's the amount that I have to hit before that $5,000 hits your real bank account.
That is exactly right, because don't take money if it's not enough for you to do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah,
otherwise,
you don't get to change what you're going to say you're going to use this.
You have
to
prepare disclosures. You have to file disclosures with the Secretary of State before you can even start your offering. So it's really important. You're going to have to tell people what you're going to use the funds
right.
for and how you're going to use it. And it's important for you to understand that it's better to get by with less
right.
and succeed in the offering, succeed in getting your minimum, succeed in getting fulfilling your entire offering, than using that cash and making happy investors.
Right.
So happy investors, usually in a PACES world, equal good customers, which mean repeat business, either for your business
right.
or as investors. And that's really an important thing to understand about crowdfunding, is that it's not just a way to get capital. In fact,
right.
it's not an easy way to get capital at all.
Fundraising is not easy under any scenario.
That's exactly right. There's a lot less risky, less burdensome ways to raise capital out there. But crowdfunding is really special because it lets you do two things. One, raise some capital. But more importantly, raise brand awareness, raise brand loyalty.
Right.
So let's take a cupcake shop, okay? We always use cupcake shops because it's fun to talk about cupcakes.
It's the trendy thing, too.
Right? So we need $200,000 to open a storefront. Like, right. I've been baking cupcakes in my kitchen, and I need $200,000 to open a storefront. Well, if I sell a revenue share interest that basically is for every cupcake I sell for the next 2 years, the investor is going to get a penny from every cupcake until I repay them some amount.
Right. Their principal investment plus an X amount.
Yeah. So where am I going to go to buy my desserts?
Right.
So if I've invested in this and I know that every time that business sells a cupcake, I'm going to get a penny, you can be darn certain that I am going to buy cupcakes for every birthday party that exists on the block.
Every time your kid's school needs cupcakes.
We are going to every cupcake day at my kid's schools. Oh my gosh, how much money would we make? Right. And not only is it that, it's that the business that has raised capital using that function is building their revenue stream because the people who are loyal, who have invested in them, remain committed and become brand ambassadors as well. You need cupcakes for Janie's birthday party? Why don't you go get 4 dozen? Well, maybe. How many kids? Maybe you need 5 dozen.
Oh, you
how many
want a
pennies
traditional,
is that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you don't need a sheet cake. Everybody's
doing cupcakes. That's exactly right. So it becomes a way to bring your customers in partnership with
you. It's customer loyalty in a different degree.
It's really about a neighborhood seeking capital from their neighbors and their customers. And we've never been able to do it before.
Right.
But I'm also getting off topic. So let's talk about, that North Carolina PACE's offering is the platform. You have to use an internet. There's some strict rules about what you can say off the internet. So it's not... You can't advertise broadly. You can.
You're
do
not going to put up a billboard and says, "I guarantee you, if you give me a dollar, I'll give you a $1.10 next year."
That's exactly right.
That's prohibited.
You can't do that.
You could have something in general that says,
"Go to this platform to find out more information." Right. Basically, that's it.
If you love my cupcakes, go to this platform to see what we're
doing. So it's very controlled because we want everyone to see the same information on that internet website. Okay, the new thing. And by the way, that way we are just described, that NCPO, is the way most states do it. It's the way the federal government do it. It's known. It's kind of understood. So we in North Carolina and our regulators were really, really
innovative
and creative. And I really want to give kudos to Secretary of State Elaine Marshall, her staff, Kevin Harrington, the staff of the Securities Division. They really listened to the stakeholders about a way to make interstate crowdfunding work.
Well, and I think they understand, and I think North Carolina understands, that while it's great to have those huge publicly traded Fortune 500 companies, the majority of jobs, the majority of growth in the state, the majority of the economy is driven by the small business that needs the $200,000. And what you're about to
and
talk about is
And it's not only in the rural centers that our state is strong. It's not only in the urban centers and in the, we're in Chapel Hill. We've got lots of businesses here, but we have businesses all across this state from the mountains to the beach. And we need all of our companies to be able to use this tool. So the new tool that we have is called a local public offering. It's an LPO, and this is beautiful. It is a way that North Carolina companies can raise up to $250,000 in 12 months, no more than that, $250,000, but they can advertise their offerings after they get that advertising materials cleared, and they can or they don't have to use the internet. So they can establish an internet presence to bring in investors, or this is the place where you can put a sign in your window that says, "We're trying to open a second cupcake shop. Would you join us? See Bev, the cupcake lady." Now, we will need all of that Right. Advertising materials to be pre-cleared with the folks in North Carolina. There's a lot of steps you have to take, but you can use three kind of fundamental types of structures of your offerings under this LPO model. You can sell an ownership interest in your company, which is referred to as equity. I have to say, personally, that's my least favorite because most small companies are not looking to give away an ownership piece of their pie when they raise capital. They don't want to give control away.
Right.
They're not looking to provide an exit through an IPO or a merger and acquisition. They just need capital to grow. So I really don't like equity, but you can use equity. And some people in the right circumstances, it'll work. Or you can issue debt, just a straight loan, you know, 8% interest, 10% interest. Or, which is really, really the part that I like that you
the
see.
The last one's my favorite. The one you're about to talk about.
The revenue share. So, and this is exactly what I was talking about with the cupcake.
Right.
Basically, you determine, the business determines what their profits are each month or each quarter. And they offer a percentage of their profits to be paid back along with principal, until you reach a multiple.
Right.
1.25, 1.75, maybe 2x if you're really, really generous, over time. And so the default risk of this really drops. Because if you are only required to pay 2% of your profits, if your profits are zero that month, right, you don't pay anything.
What? And it's the best of debt and it's the best of equity from the standpoint – you don't have to pay it if you don't produce the profit. Where with equity, which that's the part that's similar to equity, where with debt, if you promise to pay $1,000 a month plus $100 for interest, then that payment, that $1,100 every month has to be made. But with the revenue sharing, as you're ramping up and you put that extra capacity in that next storefront or whatever you're doing, that new oven, whatever, until it's producing,
You don't have to pay for it.
It pays for itself once it's working and generating
revenue. That's exactly
revenue.
Right. And it's important that you, when you're structuring your revenue share, that you understand your ramp up. And it's really helpful. A revenue share in particular is really helpful for a company with an existing source of revenue, particularly so that they can assess, this is what I've done historically. This change increases it, won't increase it. But even if I base my revenue projections off of my historical numbers, then I can give a kind of certainty to myself that I can hit these targets. And so the rev share is really the magic sauce, I think, for many companies that the LPO in particular is really targeted for. And let me just, with the LPO, the same rules that we said before, you have to be a North Carolina company. You have to be doing business here in the state.
Your
investor has to be here. You have to put caps in place. You can only use a certain number of types of instruments under an LPO. But then you still have to make your disclosure. But you can file your advertising materials before you use them. And you have a lot more freedom about the way you reach your potential investor, which means for folks who don't have broadband internet access, which unfortunately is the case here in this state.
There's areas in every state.
But they can still use this exemption
because you can mail a letter. You can put a sign in your store. You can put a sign in the storefront.
You could have a meeting at your church.
Yeah.
You could invite people over to dinner. You could have a pig picking. As long as, first of all, you stay on script.
Right.
Because
that's the biggest danger.
It's very important to understand that. And at some point we might talk about kind of the legal risks, but one of the most important legal risks to understand with securities offerings, whatever exemption you're using, even if you're not doing an exemption, there's this thing called anti-fraud liability, which is unavoidable. There's no way to get around it. You can do your best to protect yourself, But fundamentally, if you make a material misstatement or omit a material piece of information that the reasonable investor would have wanted to know or relied upon right. in making an investment decision, that's fraud. And you have potential liability. Some bad things can happen with that.
It's criminal. It's not civil. It's criminal. So orange jumpsuits or striped jumpsuits can come into the equation if it's egregious.
Yes, if it's egregious. And one of the reasons why, and orange jumpsuits can also come into play if you don't conduct your offering properly, because if you don't do your offering properly, you have an illegal offering, right. and that's problematic too. So the job of your securities attorney is, one, to make sure you're jumping through the hoops that you need to right. jump, and two, to help you craft your disclosures, to help you write those scripts that reduce your risk of anti-fraud liability.
Well, and it's important to know, because it's where you're talking about the it's saying something incorrect, and it's errors of omission. You don't tell them something that's a critical piece of information. You don't tell them there's a potential lawsuit that could be a material factor. It's kind of like those footnotes in your financial statements that said, is there any contingency that when they audit the financial statements, which most of these small businesses doing this will not have audited
financials.
That's exactly
right.
They're not required to. But it's those kind of steps we have to step through and say, is there anything that would change the potential investor's decision to do this?
For instance, if you have a seasonal business and you're doing a rev share,
right.
then it's important to tell them that your business is seasonal. If you have a Christmas tree farm, right, I don't think you're going to make a lot of money in July.
Right.
Right? I think you're going to make bukus of money from November 1st to December 24th. Right?
Right.
And thus, your investors should be told that it's unlikely that they'll get any of their revenue share in those 9 months,
nine or ten months
of the year, right? Unless you have something else.
Unless
produced.
You have a cyclical business, right. You do strawberries in the summer.
Exactly.
But it's those types of things. This and the business owner has to be able to sit down and articulate that to their attorney, to whoever else is helping them craft this, to say, okay, in the summer I sell strawberries because I have strawberry fields, but that only is in May and June. I sell Christmas trees in November and December, and you might have something else that is in the business for one or other, but as long as we disclose that and we explain this, and then whatever this thing that we're going to do. So let's say we have strawberries in May and June, we have pine trees and stuff in November and December, and suddenly we're going to do something related to Easter or Halloween to
right.
plug that, and that's what the money's for. So it's not going to be spent on the Christmas trees, it's not going to be spent on the strawberry fields. It's going to be another seasonal business, but the revenue the company generates all year long is what gets the percentage on.
Right, if that's the way you structure yeah. it. So you just have to be upfront. And I do want to, you had said you work with your attorneys to come up with that. And, you know, we get a bum rap sometimes because we bill. And we don't offer free advice. This isn't free advice, by the way. It's just
educational. And these are all
but
just hypothetical.
The point being is that the more you bring to the table, the more you as the company owner can bring well-prepared business plans, well-thought-out understanding of the risks that go into my business. I can give you a list of the information that I need to see
right.
in the disclosure document that you're going to need to prepare for a PACES offering. But if you ask me to write it for you, I don't know your business.
Right.
And it's gonna take
right.
a lot of
you're
time.
You're gonna have to ask questions,
so
you're gonna have
get,
to do that process.
Roll up your, if you wanna crowdfund, if you wanna raise capital under any type of structure, roll up your sleeves, get educated, and write your business plan. Write your business.
Well, and then I'm gonna say, take it not a commercial, but just an interruption to this process, because So many businesses do not have business plans, and they want to walk in and they say, well, can't you write my business plan? Here's $500, write a business plan. A $500 business plan is not a comprehensive business plan. You might get somebody to review some of it for $500, but we're talking marketing, we're talking economic factors, we're talking about historic financial statements, we're talking about your projections of financial performance.
Competition.
We're analyzing your business, and essentially you're going to go through and walk through on paper all the things that have happened, you want to happen, and what could happen under the minimum amount you've decided to raise, the net amount that comes out of that into the business. So if you're raising $200,000 and you have legal fees, you have the marketing fees, you have all these different things, whatever that net amount is, what are you going to do with it? And what's the impact on the business? And then what is that revenue share, or what is that debt agreement, or what is the equity that you're going to exchange for this? And that business plan should, if you spend your time on it, let you see where your pitfalls are. Is everybody that already owns the business on the same page as to how the money is going to be spent? What our results have been, all of those kind of things. And so that business plan is critical for your securities attorney, your potential investors to understand, and that's where you're going to disclose everything that's material to help them make the decision.
And recognize also that there's things that you might not want to share with the world that probably you may need to. So for instance, if you've hired your brother to be the marketing director of your company, you're going to need to disclose the fact that you've hired your brother and how much you pay him. You're going to need to disclose how much you pay yourself. You will need to provide some form of financial information. And depending on the company, that's not a situation that some companies want to be in, because they view their financial information as a competitive,
It is. It's proprietary information.
It's proprietary information. And so if that's important to you, understand that crowdfunding won't be for you, because you have to make those disclosures. And after you complete an offering, you'll have ongoing quarterly reporting requirements. So it's not a great detailed report. It's basically taking your financial update that you put it together for your offering document and updating it every quarter about what's going on financially, what's going on with the company,
what milestones you've hit, what's missed.
That's exactly right.
It's the things that, you know, if you were thinking you were going to hit a home run and you hit a single, you got to tell them that you hit the single and not the home run, and what the impact is going to be and what the expectation is.
Right, and that's a quarterly requirement. Now, it should be pretty easy. You can put it up on your website with a PDF. You might be able to shoot an email out to the people to know that they're coming in. But it's important to understand that. The other thing I want to also let folks know is that crowdfunding means you're bringing a crowd to your company, and that is good.
And that is bad, and that is ugly sometimes.
So these folks, irrespective of what kind of security they actually buy in your company, they are invested in your company, and it's emotional for them. It's not only an emotional decision, it's a financial decision. And in crowdfunding a lot, the first decision is emotional. They want a story that they want to follow, that they love. But if that financial world starts to shift a little bit, or they're not really, really clear on how it all works, they will come to the company and start asking questions.
And it's managing the sharing of information, but it's also understanding that when the difference between a non-accredited and accredited investor is oftentimes it's the emotional thing, or an accredited investor tends to know, I put the money up, I may never get it back. A non-accredited investor may suddenly get laid off, not have the cushion, and come knocking on the door saying, well, I need the $5,000 back, and that's not the way it works.
That's exactly
so
right.
So that's those disclosures, that's that understanding, and that's that relationship building that has to be explained in the communication. Nobody invests anything in anything, whether it's crowdfunding or other, without the realization that what that principal that they invest may never come back, plus whatever.
And the other thing to understand, another key factor about the difference between an accredited investor and the everyman investor, is the experience that an accredited investor brings to the company as a partner. So an accredited investor usually is investing in a business because they understand the business.
Right.
And they have some expertise that, in theory, they can lend to help the entrepreneur or help the small business owner to improve their business. So it can be like a partnership. Now, sometimes it's not a great partnership for the founders because people can come in and they can lose control. But there is a partnership in the sense of, in addition to the money they're bringing, the capital bringing to the table, they're bringing experience and
business
advice.
Expertise or industry experience.
Contacts.
Other investors.
That's right.
Other customers. All of those things that can come
and
into play.
And that benefit can be lost with the everyman investor. Doesn't mean that they're not there. It's just not every person who puts $100 into the cupcake shop will be someone that the owner can actually go to for support. And so it's an important understanding
right.
of while you may gain a crowd and a following, you also have a crowd to deal with, and that can be distracting.
And the emails come in and the phone calls, because I've had clients in the past with their traditional fundraising, there was a percentage that everyone always seems to do of the non-accredited investor. And when things don't go on the timeline or whatever, you're generally not getting it from the phone call from the person that put $250,000 in. You're getting the phone call that put $10,000 in. And that $10,000 was a huge amount of their net worth and everything they'd worked for. And when things don't go right,
you're getting
a weekly call. You might get a daily email. They want to know what's going on, what you're doing. Because there's that emotional part. There's that little bit of panic. That stuff, because, and especially if it's their first time having
done
it.
That's right. That's right.
And if you're not prepared to do that, that's one of your go, no go things, too. It's like you may say, well, I only take accredited investors, even in a crowdfunding.
Right. And so there's also, I'm not just talking here to educate the companies that might want to use crowdfunding.
It's the investors.
It's the investors, too. If you want to diversify your investment portfolio and you are not super wealthy, if you only have $5,000 that you can play with, and by the way,
right.
any investment money
is at
risk of loss. So it should be monopoly money in your head that you will lose because your daughter is much better and will not let you off the hook when you land on Park Place.
Right.
Right? You should be willing to lose that money. But if you only have $5,000 to lose, diversify your portfolio. Play. Put a little bit in one offering, a little bit in another. Spread that out so that if one deal that you chooses tanks, you haven't lost everything.
But and that in reality, that's what a venture capital firm or a private equity firm, that's what your mutual fund does. That's what the stock market is. And
that's what crowdfunding lets
Everyday business investors
do now. That's the point, is that what used to be available to people on the tens of millions
right.
of dollar threshold is now available to every man in littler chunks, but
right.
those littler chunks are the right amount for you and me, right?
Right.
I don't have $100,000 to invest in one company, let alone 10 companies, but I might have $10,000 to invest in the next 12 months, and I'm not going to put $5,000 into two. I'm going to break it up.
And put $1,000 into 10.
And
right?
put $1,000 into 10, or put $8,000 into 8 and hold $2,000 back because I don't see anything else that I like.
Well, and it's I was talking to a group in Raleigh, and it was a group of ladies who weren't quite high net worth individuals at the time, but the end thing for their group became to have invested in a small tech startup or whatever. And the lady I was talking to didn't feel comfortable with that. I said, then you shouldn't be doing it, because they were different ages, and so the 20-something has another 40 years
That's
to
exactly
put in
right.
their retirement account. But if you're 64 and you're retiring next year, and you don't have the extra $10,000, just because everybody else is doing it doesn't mean it's the right thing for you at that time.
And that's also about the crowd.
Right.
So
peer pressure.
Peer pressure. So one of the things that folks will tell you about your offerings is you want it, and this is true of what I call traditional crowdfunding, the Kickstarter, the Indiegogos, the GoFundMes. You want day one for you to pop. You want to pop it at least 25%, you know, to in, maybe 35%, so that the crowd sees that you have momentum.
You have credibility whenever someone on day one has done it. If you're on day three and you've raised $100 out of $100,000, the crowds ask the question, is this legitimate? Why isn't anybody else doing it?
That's right. But even as an investor, if you see the crowd running towards something, you don't have to follow, right? I remember playing Pokemon Go in Germany last summer, and I was in this big city, and the crowd, there was crowds of people, and they started running around the corner trying to chase some Pokemon.
People got injured.
They stopped. And they ran back to where we were because the Pokemon had moved. So make your own investment decision.
Well, and it's, you know, a lot of times people say invest in the things that you're familiar with. So if someone has an invention that you're going to invest in and it's going to be on the next electric car, you think, because the guy really knows it and you understand the car industry and you understand electric, then that may be something you have expertise in and you're more comfortable assessing that technology.
Right.
If you know nothing about retail cupcake shops, other than you like to eat cupcakes, that may not be where you want to put your money, other than you'd like to eat 10,000 cupcakes in a year, so that may be where you want to do it.
Or you love Janie.
Right.
And Janie, the owner. I think her name was something else earlier.
Yeah, that's right.
And so the other thing, you know, a lot of people ask me about what's a good candidate. What kind of company is going to be a successful Kickstarter,
you know, or crowdfunding? And let's answer that from an investor and from the company going out there doing it.
And I think that they're kind of similar in the sense that I want a good crowdfunding candidate is a company that has a following already existing. Somebody who has a social media presence, who has customers, who has a customer list, a loyalty program, who has a crowd ready and waiting for them to be tapped into. Because no matter what people tell you, those platform operators don't have a crowd. All they are is a bulletin board. They are a fancy, schmancy processing bulletin board. They don't have the crowd.
And they're not in the business to generate the crowd for you.
That's exactly right. You have to bring your crowd with you to wherever, however you're conducting your offering. So first, do you have a large social media presence? So if you don't today, right now, but you think you are a company that might want to use crowdfunding, the first thing you should be doing is building your social media presence. Do not say, we're going to raise capital, come find us. Never say that,
right?
Because that's illegal. You have to follow the rules before you can say that. But you can say, we're Janie's Cupcake Shops, and today our feature flavor is vanilla mint, if that's
even a good flavor. And if you want to capture their emails, if you want to catch people's exactly social
right.
emails, then you say, and when you sign up for our newsletter, you get a free cupcake we'll give you a coupon for the free cupcake, or we give you
something. build your social media presence, build your following. Don't ask for investors.
Right.
Ask for people who would like to receive your mailer or a discount.
Especially like, and we think about it from the rural communities that don't have the broadband. They're probably not doing the social media. But get your mailing addresses. Have them sign up for,
if they walk into the restaurant, have them sign up for a
rewards program.
Address, email if they have it, so that you can send out flyers. Build your list of people. So that's the first thing.
Right.
Do you have a crowd? And then the other thing is, is your business ready? You know, again, it is. I've been harping on this revenue share, but I really think that if you need money for an idea, particularly a complicated medical device idea, that's probably not a great fit for intrastate crowdfunding.
Right. Because you need a broader audience that's going to be interested in either for that medical purpose, that kind of thing, that's sophisticated. And it's not, generally, you're not going to find enough money or enough investors in your state. And that's a bigger thing.
That's,
you're
going to need
more money later.
And exactly. How much, and the amount of money do you need? Is it a small chunk of money to target one aspect of growth? So really, companies, do you have a revenue stream already? Or do you just need a chunk of money to hit the revenue, to start producing revenue? I need a big, huge vat to start producing my iced tea to get it into the Whole Foods market.
You need
market.
A second oven.
Right.
You
those
need,
ca- you I need,
need
a bigger isolated
mixer,
thing,
you need, right.
which pushes you into a revenue
well,
place.
Well, I tell a lot of my clients, it's a capacity bottleneck breaker is usually what the average Main Street business is looking for when they need the funds.
That's right.
It's an expansion thing. It's a capacity breaker. You have all the customers coming in, but you need another oven, or you need to replace an oven, or you need to add a mixer.
Or you need a new storefront.
Right.
That's exactly right. Now I'm trying to remember the last thing I was going to say.
It's okay. It'll come back to you. So we're going to make sure we have the crowd. We're going to use it for a capacity thing, a growth thing as a small business. We're going to make sure we understand who we're asking this from. So like we've got the NCPO. I'm going to kind of recap thing. So we've got the NCPO. We have to do the platform. We have limited types of advertising we can do on that.
Correct.
And whatever we do, it's just pointing it to that platform and saying, here's all the information.
And under both of these, you have to do your filings first. So the LPO is much more flexible in the way you can conduct your offering. You don't have to do it on the internet. You can do it in person, but you have to go through a little bit more hoops about process.
You're going to sit down with the North Carolina Secretary of State Securities Division when you're going to do an LPO, because Leo said this when he was on the show a couple weeks ago, and have a conversation.
Yes.
You want to have some conversation with your securities attorney before you have the conversation with the Securities Division. But you're going to have a conversation with them because that's part of the LPO process.
That's exactly right.
You physically will be meeting with the Securities Division to make sure, as part of that process, to get approval.
They will look you in the eye and say, do you understand what you're undertaking, and are you prepared to follow through with the requirements? And your answer should be, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, we do. Then also, if you do public meetings, I don't know if Leo said this, mm-mm. If you do a public meeting, you also have to invite them. So if you did an announcement at a church function,
right.
which, by the way, you could do yes. if you wanted to, you just need to let the Secretary of State know that you were doing it, because they would send somebody, probably. And that meeting, I also want to say, they've assured me, the folks at the Secretary of State's office, that you don't have to come to Raleigh to have that meeting,
right.
that they will come to you.
If you were in Robeson County, they're going to send somebody to Robeson County.
That's exactly
they don't
right.
expect you to have all of your crowd, who's going to be local because you're doing an LPO
right.
or whatever, to come to Raleigh.
Or
so
that first
Robeson.
Meeting.
Right.
You don't have to come to Raleigh. Well, they'll find a place that works for everyone to have a sit-down meeting.
Well, and I having been an auditor at the banks and stuff, as an auditor, it was always good for us to go to the bank to do the audit. Same thing, I would think, for their comfort level is to show up and to make sure there really is a physical location. I mean,
oh,
it was just like, you know.
These are Janie's cupcakes.
Let's find Janie's cupcakes first. Remember, she's saying she's in business. Because, you know, and I've told stories on air before, but on other types of funding, whether it's government grant applications and those kind of things, when you say you have a physical location or you expect to have it by the time it's awarded, somebody needs reassurance that you really do. So if you didn't have it and you say you're going to have a $2 million solar power manufacturing facility in downtown Raleigh by the time this starts, then somebody's going to show up to make sure that's there. And
yes.
it's not unusual for them to want to come to your place of business to really see what it is and where you think you're going to put up the sign in the store. And if you're going to show them the sign, they're going to say, well, it's going to be here, or we're going to have a digital sign that's up and shows this is what it is and this is what we're going to be putting on it. And it gives them context.
Right. So, and I think we should also be prepared to, over the next few years, particularly these next few months, that everyone's learning exactly how
right.
it works. And so I think the regulators are eager to have people come and say, we want to do this. This is the way we think
right.
it can work within the rules. And they'll look at what we say and they'll go, well, have you thought about X, Y, or Z? And together, you'll get on the path that works. They're not looking to catch you doing something wrong just because they can. They're looking for everyone who has interest. The regulators, the attorneys, the accountants are interested in making this ecosystem work
right,
for our state.
The objective of having this happen is for it to work right, to work well, to make businesses grow, to get jobs, economic development.
That's exactly right.
So it's not about saying, oh, gotcha. They're not setting up gotchas.
They are not setting up
and
gotchas.
And everybody is learning in this. So the first few people will do something and they'll learn something about it. So like, okay, let's use not Janie's Cupcakes, but let's say a restaurant. And we're going to do an LPO. And we decide we're going to do 200,000, 40. We have to have 100,000 of it or we're not going to take the money out. And we're going to advertise in our storefront, in our restaurant. And so we might want to have them approve table toppers.
That's right.
We want them to have approve the digital sign we're going to have scrolling, or what comes up in the periodically in the music, or if we're going to put something on our menus.
That's right. So understanding your planning on your marketing is also important. And this is something that's unusual for people who have historically raised capital, and for lawyers who have historically talked to people about raising capital,
you're probably going,
I'm using the word marketing budget.
Advertising.
And unlike the world 5 years ago, where there never was a marketing or an advertising budget
right.
in connection with a private offering of any kind, you have one now. So it's important for you to understand the importance of that marketing and also to find the right partners to build
right.
your marketing so that you aren't overspending on your marketing, but targeting the right kind of marketing, and that your marketing help, whether it be your brother or whether it be you or whether it be a marketing group that you hire, they need to understand these rules. Because if they mess up on your behalf,
you're liable.
It's your right. problem, not theirs.
And to think in that context is the marketing firms are traditionally used to tweaking an ad, right? And so you get the ad approved. Well, if you tweak it, the ad has to be reapproved.
That's exactly
right.
So
it's not whether, you know, you changed the font size or whatever, or you decided to go from extra to creamy or whatever, you know, it's like on the thing. Any change to that is no longer the ad that's been approved, and you need to go back to ask the securities division, is this a material change and you need to review it? And if they're 9 times out of 10 during this learning process going to say, yes, I need to see what you've changed.
But it should be pretty quick.
Yeah.
I mean,
Leo made that commitment.
Their review process technically is 10 business days. And I think when you make your first filing with them, when you have your disclosure documents,
right.
when you send your initial slog of advertising materials in, it will take 10 business days and maybe a little bit more to fine tune it. But I think if it's a matter of, oh, next week we want to, you know, and we want
right.
to change our advertising to this, can you review it? I think that should be pretty quick. The one thing that I want folks to also to think about, two things about how investment crowdfunding, which is what I call
right.
LPOs and NCPOs, relates to traditional crowdfunding. The first thing is that the process of creating a crowdfunding campaign that you might go through for Kickstarter and Indiegogo should be part of your consideration, particularly for an LPO where you have a much broader ability
right.
to advertise. Because I know people who are doing high-level Kickstarter campaigns have things scheduled for every fourth day.
Right.
And if you have that schedule out, then give that schedule to the regulators on the get-go, and they will be eager to see that you have it planned, right? So take what we learn about an Indiegogo and Kickstarter campaign and build on it. And then the other thing is, don't think that investment crowdfunding lives in a vacuum.
Right.
You can, now we have all these tools to get capital. So you can combine things. You gotta think about them and be careful and follow rules. But you can combine a Kickstarter campaign. You can start with that, build your crowd, get some money, get some following, get some enthusiasm about your
right.
product and your business, And then maybe you want to combine, you need $300,000. Well, that's too much for an LPO, but maybe you can equipment finance $100,000 that you need. Maybe a bank will give you $50,000, and then you're left with a chunk of $100,000. That's great for crowdfunding.
Well, and that's what needs when you're sitting down with your business consultants, with all this. It's, and that's why that business plan is so critical, because it's like, well, I need $350,000. I can't do this. That means I have to do this. No, just what you exactly said.
Small business loans.
There's different combinations of things. And as you go through those scenarios, you realize, well, it is $350,000 because the net amount I'm still going to get is $250,000, but I can do these different things. But you have to be compliant in disclosing and understanding that if you raised $100,000 through an Indiegogo campaign because you sold the first version of something, you know, or you gave away T-shirt, whatever you were doing, then that is not revenue from operations. And when you're disclosing it to go, you can't put in as if it was revenue for operations. Right. In the financials, you got to say, yes, we have $100,000 here, but we did it from the traditional crowdfunding campaign of selling
T-shirts. So it's not revenue. It's not historical revenue.
And you have to disclose that, because that could really distort something. And then that's an omission that creates an issue when we're coming to the other stuff. And so it's making sure that all the puzzle pieces come together. And before you do any of this, set certain points that are go, no-go points. The accounting, marketing, building the crowd. I'm in a rural community. I'm in a well-developed urban community. Whatever it is, and work through those processes.
That's right.
And believe it or not, we're at the end of the show. You want to give everybody your contact information?
Sure. Again, Benji Taylor Jones. I'm at Warden Smith. My phone number is 919-277-9142. It's also Benji. Oh, no, it's not. It's btjones@wardandsmith.com. Also, if you're interested in learning more or meeting me in person, on June 29th, I'll be at the Frontier, which is out in RTP, and you can find that invite and sign up through Exit Event. But give me a call if you want to learn more, or shoot me an email, and I'd love to chat.
Well, and Benji, thanks for being on the show today. And everyone, until next time, stay focused on the important things.